The Fourth Flash. The title, The Highway of the Practices of the Prophet, was considered appropriate for this treatise. Although the imamate question is a matter of secondary importance because of the excessive attention paid to it, and because of its relevance to our basic duties towards the Quran and belief, it is in part discussed here in regard to its being a subject dealt with by the sciences of theology, Kalam, and the principles of religion. In the name of Allah, the Merciful, the Compassionate, now has come a prophet from among yourselves. It heavily weighs upon him that you might suffer. Full of concern is he for you, and full of compassion and mercy towards the believers. But if they turn away, say, Allah is enough for me, there is no God but He. In Him have I placed my trust, for He is the sustainer of the mighty throne. Quran, Surah 9, verses 128-9. Say, I ask no recompense of you save love of close kin. Quran, Surah 42, verse 23. We shall point out in two stations two of the many vast truths contained in these glorious verses. First station. The first station consists of 4 points. First point. This describes the perfect compassion and mercy towards his community of Allah's noble messenger, peace and blessings be upon him, according to sound narrations, which at the terror of the resurrection, everyone, even the prophets, will cry out for themselves. Allah's noble messenger will demonstrate his pity and compassion by calling out, My community, my community. Footnote 3. Bukhari, Tawhid 36. Tafsir 17. Surah 5, Fitan 1. Muslim, Imam 326, 327. Tirmidhi, Qiyama 10. Darimi, Muqaddimah 8. As is affirmed by those who uncover the mysteries of creation, when he was born, his mother heard among his supplications the words, My community, my community. Then the whole history of his life, as well as the kind and compassionate conduct which he propagated, demonstrate his perfect compassion and clemency. Also, through displaying an infinite need for the innumerable prayers of his community, he showed a boundless compassion, for he showed that out of his perfect compassion, he was also concerned with the happiness of all of them. Thus you can understand how lacking in gratitude and conscience it is not to observe the practices of so kind and compassionate a leader. Second point. Among the universal and general duties of prophethood, Allah's noble messenger, peace and blessings be upon him, displayed great compassion in certain particular minor matters. Superficially, his expending great compassion on such matters seems inappropriate to the supreme importance of the function of prophethood. But in reality, such minor matters were the tips or samples of a chain which could be the means to the fulfillment of a universal and general function of prophethood. Therefore, the greatest importance was given to the sample for the sake of the mighty chain. For example, the extraordinary compassion of Allah's noble messenger, peace be upon him, showed towards Hassan and Hussein in their childhood, and the great importance he gave them was not only due to love arising from natural kindness and family feeling. It was rather because they were each the tip of a luminous thread of the function of prophethood and the source, sample, and index of a community of great consequence which would receive the legacy of prophethood. Indeed, the messenger, peace be upon him, used to take Hassan, may Allah be pleased with him, tenderly into his arms and kiss his head for the sake of the luminous, blessed, Mahdi-like descendants who would spring from him, like Shah Gilani, Ghoth al-Azam, who would be the inheritors of prophethood and would bear the sacred Sharia of Muhammad. Footnote 4. Sheikh Abd al-Qadir Gilani. 561, 1165 to 6, founder of the Kadari Order. He saw with the eye of prophethood the sacred service and duty they would perform in the future, and approved and applauded them. He kissed Hassan's head as a sign of approval and encouragement. Also, he embraced Hussein and accorded him importance and tenderness on account of the illustrious imams like Zain al-Abdin and Ja'far al-Sadiq, and the numerous Mahdi-like luminous persons, true inheritors of prophethood, who would spring from his effulgent line, and for the sake of the religion of Islam and functions of prophethood. Since with his heart, which had knowledge of the unseen, the Prophet Muhammad's, peace be upon him, luminous vision and future penetrating eye observed from the era of bliss in this world the assembly of the resurrection on the side of post-eternity, and from the earth saw paradise and watched events which had occurred since the time of Adam were concealed in the dark veils of the past, and even received the visions of the All-Glorious One. He surely saw the spiritual poles and the imams who were to be the inheritors of prophethood, and the Mahdis who would follow on in the lines of Hassan and Hussein. And for sure he would kiss their heads in the name of all of them. Yes, Shah Gilani has a large part in his kissing Hassan's head. The third point. According to one interpretation, the meaning of the verse, say, I ask of you no recompense save love of close kin. Quran, Surah 42, verse 23, is that Allah's noble messenger, peace be upon him, wants no reward for carrying out the duty of messengership. He wants only love for his family. If it is asked, according to this meaning, it seems there is an advantage to be gained from a family relationship, whereas according to the meaning of, the most honoured of you in the sight of Allah is the most righteous of you. Quran, Surah 49, verse 13. It is not in the regard to family relationships that prophethood functions, but in regard to closeness to Allah. The answer, within his vision which penetrated the unseen, Allah's most noble messenger, peace be upon him, saw that his family would become like a light-giving tree within the world of Islam. The overwhelming majority of those who would perform the duties of guides instructing every level of the world of Islam in human attainment and perfection would emerge from his family. He divined that his community's prayer for his family in the final section of the prescribed prayers, O Allah, grant blessings to our Master Muhammad and to the family of our Master Muhammad, as you granted blessings to Abraham and to the family of Abraham. Indeed, you are worthy of praise, most exalted, would be accepted. That is to say, just as the vast majority of the luminous guides among the people of Abraham were prophets of the family and line of Abraham, so he saw in his community the spiritual poles of his family performing the momentous duties of Islam. And in most of the paths and Sufi orders, like the prophets of Israel. Therefore, being commanded to say, I ask of you no recompense, say love of close kin, he wanted his community to love his family. There are numerous narrations corroborating this fact. He repeatedly decreed, I leave you two things. If you adhere to them, you will find salvation. One is Allah's book, the other is my family. Footnote 7. Tirmidhi, Manakib, 31. Musnad, 3, 14, 17, 26. For those who were the source and guardians of the Prophet's practices and were charged with complying with them in every respect were his family. This is why the truth contained in this hadith was communicated intending adherence to the book and the Prophet's practices. That is to say, what was required from the family of the Prophet in respect of the function of messengership were the practices of the Prophet. Just as someone who abandoned the Prophet's practices could not truly be a member of his family, so such a person could not be a true friend to them. Also, the reason he desired his community to gather round his family was that, with Allah's permission, he knew his family were going to become very numerous with the passing of time, and that Islam was going to become weak. Therefore, an extremely strong and numerous, mutually supportive group of people was necessary so that it could be the means to and center for the spiritual and moral progress of the world of Islam. With divine permission, he thought of this and desired that his community should gather round his family. Indeed, even if the members of the Prophet's family were not greatly in advance of others in matters of belief and faith, they were still greatly ahead of them in regard to submission, partiality, and partisanship. For they were followers of Islam by nature, birth, and temperament. Even if natural partiality is weak and unworthy, or unjustifiable even, it cannot be given up. So, would it be possible for a person to give up his support for a truth to which all his forefathers, who were most strong, most constant and true, and most illustrious had been bound, and through which they had won glory, and for which they had sacrificed their lives, a truth he felt clearly to be so fundamental and natural. Thus, due to this intense partiality and natural submission, the family of the Prophet accepted the least hint in favour of the religion of Islam, as though it was a powerful proof, for they were partial by nature. Others became partial after some powerful proof. Fourth point. In connection with the third point, we shall indicate briefly a matter which is a point of dispute between the Shi'i and Sunnis and has been magnified to such an extent that it has entered the books on the tenets of faith and among the fundamentals of belief. The Sunnis say, Ali, may Allah be pleased with him, was the fourth of the rightly guided caliphs. Abu Bakr al-Siddiq, may Allah be pleased with him, was superior to him and was more deserving of the caliphate. Therefore, it passed to him first. While the Shi'i say, it was Ali's right, and injustice was done to him. The most worthy of them all was Ali. A summary of the arguments for their claims is this. They say, the hadiths of the Prophet about Ali, and with his title of King of Sainthood, his being the recognized authority of the vast majority of the saints and spiritual paths, and his extraordinary knowledge, courage, and worship, and the Prophet's, peace and blessings be upon him, intense concern for him and towards his descendants, all show that it was he who was the most worthy. The caliphate was always his right. It was seized from him. The answer. The fact that Ali, may Allah be pleased with him, followed the first three caliphs, whom he repeatedly acknowledged and held the position of their Sheikh al-Islam, refutes these claims of the Shi'i. Furthermore, the victories of Islam and the struggles against its enemies in the time of the first three caliphs and the events in Ali's time refute the Shi'i's claims. And again, from the point of view of the Islamic caliphate, that is to say, the Sunni's claim is rightful. If it is said that the Shi'i are two, one are the sainthood Shi'i and the other are the caliphate Shi'i, through mixing hatred and politics, the second group may have been unjust, but the first group were not concerned with partisan politics. However, the sainthood Shi'i joined the caliphate Shi'i. That is, some of the saints of the Sufi orders considered Ali to be superior, and they endorsed the claims of the caliphate Shi'i. The answer. It is necessary to consider Ali, may Allah be pleased with him, in two respects. One is from the point of view of his personal perfections and rank, and the second is from the point of view of his representing the collective personality of the Prophet's family. As for this collective personality, it displays an aspect of the most noble messenger's, peace and blessings be upon him's, essential nature. Thus, in regard to the first point, foremost, Ali himself and all the people of truth gave precedence to Abu Bakr and Umar. They saw their ranks as higher in the service of Islam and closeness to Allah. As for the second point, in respect of being the representative of the collective personality of the prophet's family, and the collective personality of the prophet's family representing an aspect of the Muhammadan truth, Ali has no equal. Thus, the highly laudatory hadiths about Ali look to the second point. There is a sound narration which corroborates this fact. The most noble prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, decreed, "The descendants of each prophet are from himself. My descendants are those of Ali." Footnote 8. Tabrani, Al-Majma, Al-Kabir, number 2630. Al-Haythami, Majma, Al-Zad'id, X-333. Al-Munawi, Faid Al-Qadir, 223, number 1717. The reason the hadiths praising Ali more than the other three caliphs have become so widespread is that the people of truth, that is the Sunnis, spread many narrations about him in response to the Umayyads and Qarijites attacking and disparaging him unjustly. Since the other rightly guided caliphs were not subject to such criticism and detraction, no need was felt to spread hadiths about them. Furthermore, the Prophet, peace and blessings upon him, saw with the eye of prophethood the grievous events and internal strife to which Ali would be exposed in the future. In order to save him from the despair of his community, from thinking unfavorably of him, he consoled him and guided his community with important hadiths like, "Whosoever master I am, Ali too is his master." Footnote 9. Tirmidhi, Man Akib, 19. Ibn Majah, Muqaddima, 11. Musnad, I-84, 118, 119, 152, 331, 4. 238, 360, 321, 4, 247, 366, 419, Al-Qattani, Nazm, Al-Mutanthir, Fil Ahadith, Al-Mutawitir, 24, Al-Munawi, Faid, Al-Qadir, 6, 218, Ibn Hibam, Sahih, 9, 42, Al-Hakim, Al-Mustadrak, 2, 133, 134. The excessive love of the sainthood Shi'i towards Ali, may Allah be pleased with him, and influenced by the Sufi orders, their deeming him superior, cannot make them answerable to the decree of the caliphate Shi'i. For by reason of their way, those who follow the path of sainthood look towards their spiritual guides with love, and the mark of love is excess. It wants to see the beloved as greater than his rank, and that is how it sees him. Ecstatics may be forgiven, excesses of love. So on condition their deeming Ali more worthy, which arises from their love, does not turn into disparagement of and enmity towards the other rightly guided caliphs, and does not go beyond the fundamental teachings of Islam, it may be excused. As for the caliphate Shi'i, since political prejudice took hold of them, they could not be saved from hatred and aggression, and they lost their right to be excused. Even confirming the saying, "Not for love of Ali, but out of hatred for Umar," since Persian national pride was wounded at Umar's hand, they demonstrated their revenge in the form of love of Ali. So also, Amr ibn al-As's rebellion against Ali and Umar ibn al-Sa'd's tragic war against Hussein aroused in the Shi'i an intense anger and enmity towards the name Umar. The sainthood Shi'i have no right to criticize the Sunnis, for the Sunnis have not decreed Ali. Indeed, they love him Indeed, they love him sincerely. They avoid the excessive love, which is described as dangerous in hadiths. The Prophet's praise of Ali's followers in the hadiths refers to the Sunnis. For those of Ali's followers who love him in a moderate fashion are the Sunnis, who are a people of truth. As excessive love of Jesus, peace be upon him, is dangerous for Christians, so has it been made clear in sound hadiths that that sort of excessive love for Ali is dangerous. Footnote 10, Bukhari, Tariq al-Kabir, 2, 257, Ahmad ibn Hanbal, Fada'il a-Sahaba, 1087, 1221, 1222, al-Haythami, Majma al-Zawadi, 9, 133, Ibn Jawzi al-Ilal il-Mutani ahiya, 1, 223. If the sainthood Shi'as say, once Ali's consummate spiritual attainments are accepted, it is not possible to prefer Abu Bakr the truthful to him. The reply: it was as though the personal perfections of Abu Bakr, Siddiq al-Akbar, and Umar, Farooq al-Azam, may Allah be pleased with them, had been placed in the pan of some scales together with their achievements in the time of their caliphates, realized through their carrying out the functions inherited from the prophethood. And in the other pan had been placed Ali, may Allah be pleased with him, extraordinary personal perfections together with their internal caliphate struggles, which arose from the tragic events he was compelled to enter upon and were the object of suspicion and distrust. And the Sunnis saw that al-Siddiq's or al-Faruq's or Dil Nurain's pan weighed heavier, and so they preferred them. Moreover, as is proved in the 12th and 24th words, prophethood is so elevated in comparison to sainthood that a tiny manifestation of it is superior to a large manifestation of sainthood. In regard to this, the successes of Siddiq al-Akbar and Farooq al-Azam during their caliphates became an indication for the Sunnis that their share in the legacy of prophethood and the establishment of its laws had been divinely bestowed. Since Ali's personal perfections did not dismiss that greater share which arose from the inheritance of prophethood, he acted as Sheikh al-Islam for Abu Bakr and Umar, the Sheikhdom al-Mukarraim in the time of their caliphates, and esteemed them. How should the Sunnis, who love and revere Ali, not love and revere the Sheikhan, whom Ali loved and revered sincerely? Let us make this truth clear by means of an example. One of the sons of a very rich man is given 20 batmans of silver and 4 batmans of gold from his father's legacy, and another is given 5 of silver and 5 of gold. Footnote 11. Batman, a weight varying from 5 to 30 pounds. So, if the third is given 3 of silver and 5 of gold, of course the last two will receive less in quantity, but more in quality. Like this example, the lesser amount of Shaykhan's share of the gold of the truth of divine immediacy, which was manifested in the legacy of prophethood and the establishment of its laws, would weigh heavier than the great amount of divine proximity and the perfections of sainthood, which sprang from the jewel of sainthood. These points should also be taken into account when weighing them up. But if they are compared with one another from the point of view of personal courage, knowledge, and sainthood, the matter takes on a different complexion. Also, there can be no comparison in respect to the collective personality of the Prophet's family, which was represented in the person of Ali, may Allah be pleased with him, and the Muhammadan truth, which was manifested in that collective personality through the absolute legacy of prophethood. For contained in it is the mighty mystery of the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him. As for the Caliphate Shi'i, they have no rights before the Sunnis other than shame. For although they claim to have tremendous love for Ali, They disparage him, and their creed necessitates accusing him of immorality. For they say that, although Abu Bakr, al-Siddiq, and Umar were acting unjustly, Ali feigned approval for them. According to Shiite terminology, he dissimulated. That is, he was frightened of them and behaved hypocritically. But it is not love to see someone who was such a hero of Islam, won the title of Lion of Allah, and was commander and guide of the faithful, as simulating love for people he did not love out of fear and deception, as feigning approval for them in fear for more than 20 years, and as following wrongdoers. Ali, may Allah be pleased with him, would disclaim love of that sort. Thus, the people of truth's creed in no way disparages Ali, nor levels accusations of immorality at him. It does not attribute cowardice to such a remarkable courage, but says, if Ali had not considered the rightly guided caliphs to be right, he would not have recognized them for a minute, nor obeyed them. It means that since he thought them right and preferable, he surrendered his endeavor and courage on the way of justice. In short, too much or too little of anything is not good. Moderation is the middle way, and that is the way the Sunnis have chosen. But alas, like Kharijite ideas have infiltrated the Sunnis to an extent, so also addicts of politics and some atheists criticize Ali. They say, Allah forbid, that since he did not understand politics, he was not entirely worthy of the caliphate and could not govern. And because of these unjust accusations of theirs, Alawis feel affronted at the Sunnis, whereas the principles and basic beliefs of the Sunnis do not necessitate these ideas. Indeed, they prove the opposite. The Sunnis cannot be condemned because of ideas such as those which come from Kharijites and atheists. Rather, the Sunnis are firmer followers of Ali than the Alawis. They mention Ali in the laudatory fashion he deserves in all their khutbahs and prayers, particularly the saints and purified scholars, the vast majority of whom were of the Sunni school, recognized him as a spiritual guide and king of sainthood. The Alawis should ignore the Kharijites and atheists who have deservedly earned the enmity of both the Alawis and the Sunnis, and not take sides against the people of truth. Some Alawis even abandoned the Prophet's Sunnah out of spite for the Sunnis. Anyway, we have said too much on this matter, for it has been discussed to excess by the religious scholars. O Sunnis, who are the people of truth, and Alawis, whose way is love of the Prophet's family, quickly put an end to this meaningless, disloyal, unjust, and harmful dispute between you. Otherwise, the atheistic current, which is now so influential, will make one of you a tool against the other, and use the one to crush the other. And after defeating the one, it will destroy the tool. Since you are believers in divine unity, it is essential to leave aside unimportant matters which necessitate division, while there are 100 fundamental sacred bonds between you which command brotherhood and unity. Second station. The second station will be about the second truth of the verse. But if they turn away, say, Allah suffices me. There is no God but He. In Him do I place my trust. He is the sustainer of the throne of glory supreme. Quran, Surah 9, verse 129. Footnote 2. The second station was designated the 11th flash.